Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista. And this is Jim Dowling. I'm the host of Right Stuff. Right Stuff is a show for Thursday of every month at 8 p.m. I bring in writers, mostly local talent, and they share their writing. We get to know a writer. Tonight's my very special guest is Rob Lightfoot. In fact, I had Rob on, it was about a year ago, I think. Thanks for coming in, Rob. Appreciate it.
It's great to be here, Jim. It's good to see you in person, too. I feel honored to be your friend, and you've helped me a lot in my writing. We've collaborated over the years and given each other feedback, and that's been very helpful.
Good, good. Well, let me just say a little bit about Rob. I think you've got a lot of friends here in Reading, and there's probably a number of people wondering, what happened to Rob Lightfoot? So Rob's been involved in a lot of projects. He's a project-oriented guy, I would say. You know, he's written books. He's got a website that has to do with comedy writing. Mm-hmm. And he's involved in some projects right now that we're going to talk about. There's a lot to talk about, Rob, so let's kick this off. What are you doing these days?
Well, what I'm trying to do is be more focused, which is always a challenge for me. As you mentioned, I've kind of not exactly snuck out of Reading, but I followed the love of my life, my wife for 40 years, to Chico, because her job changes were such that we really had to move down there. And I miss Reading, I miss my friends up here. And that coincided almost exactly, not quite, but with retirement, which allowed me to get involved in all kinds of cool stuff, but kind of not so much with my writing. And in the last few months, I've resolved to get back writing regularly, and I have, and I've been working on a project that I've been thinking about for years, and I'm actually getting words on paper. One big help was in November, it's an opportunity to do the National Novel Writing Month, where the challenge is just sit down and write every day at least 1,600 words, and I did. I came up with almost 60,000 words. It's a big hot mess, but it's something
it's
that's
it's quite fun. Ambitious. Well, before we get into the details there, listeners ought to know that, Rob, you've published two or three books now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got several I'm really proud of. The earlier one's a result of a column that I wrote for News Cafe with Donnie Chamberlain. Sure. And it was the Or So It Seems column, and it was about raising the kids or whatever. And those are collected in a couple of books. And then there's one that I've learned you've got to be careful what you put up on the internet, because it can complicate your ability to publish it. But we have an additional book called Problem Child, A View from the Principal's Office, which are stories, some true, but tall tale versions of my hyperactive childhood.
Hey, I've read it. It's a great book. Yeah. Really good. In fact, if you go to Amazon, you'll see that it's gotten a lot of good reviews, too.
Yeah, it was fun. It's one of these things people say, well, what did you hope to learn, or what do you hope people come away with? And it's like, when I was driving people crazy, and I guess I still do, it was not that I was trying to be mean or obnoxious. There were just times I wasn't quite figuring out what the rules were. And I had a lot of people that were very patient with me. My mother, actually, even though I was in the principal's office daily, had my own desk, Principal Tom Lewis was a wonderful man. He was never mean to me. I had teachers that drove me crazy, but I drove them crazy too. So I had one who had mimeographs of referral slips. So she would just, I swear there was a pool going in the classroom how early in the day I would get sent away.
Yeah, they're great stories. I remember before you left Reading, we used to be in a writing group together. Oh, yeah. And you had a dream of some kind of a place on the internet where people who write comedy could get together. And you've made it happen.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Been gratifying. I've continued to meet people that I like and admire. You know, Jerry Seinfeld may have comedians in cars drinking coffee. And I'm so jealous of that, because that's kind of what I wanted. I just wanted to be able to hang around cool people and enjoy their company and talk shop. Well, I mean, I can just drive around Lamborghinis or stuff, but I have expanded my circle of really neat people through thinkingfunny.com. We're working on next year's April 1st, it's a Saturday, humor conference online. And in the past we've had animators, we've had people who wrote funny music, we've had stand-up comics, humorists, people who've done sitcoms, and just to talk shop and to to help people along. I find it's actually a very supportive group of people that want to help other writers find out how to do better.
Yeah, it's a cool concept.
Yep.
And you've had, what, two conferences so
yep,
far?
Yep, two, working on our third. And
you've gotten some notable comedians involved.
Yeah, we had, one of the people who helped with the panel was Judy Carter, who, if you Google her name or look, she is kind of the coach of coaches for stand-up. She's been around for years. We managed to attract and have participated a woman named Leanne Lord, who is funny, a stand-up comic who is getting more and more prominence. We've been lucky in having people refer friends and be trusted. We had to show up, and because we don't have, you know, a huge generous offering, but by the same token, we're not looking to charge an excessive amount to people who participate. I learned from a woman here in Reading that I really admire, that probably many people know, it's Sharon Owens, who's done many things with writers in this community
sure.
for years.
Yeah.
And as I drew near retirement a few years ago, I was looking at what I wanted to do, and I knew I wanted to do writing conferences. I literally got a second master's degree in event management to learn how to do it better, and I studied the San Francisco Writers Conference and how they do what they did. But while all that was helpful, a lot of the most useful advice I got was from Sharon Owen. And one thing she impressed upon me, and I thought it's just so her, she's such a decent person. She said, you know, you've got to remember that if in Reading, if you're getting someone who's paying to come to a conference and they're retired, that's can be pretty dearly purchased services.
Sure.
You know, fixed income or whatnot, and you really need to give them value for their money. And so we've been trying to do that, keeping things modest, trying to offer something really good, fun, and helpful without breaking people in two. And
okay. And
comping some of it out for people who can't afford it. I mean, just
that's really
it's a good vibe. Sure. I'm really glad we're doing it. It's been fun.
Yeah. If you didn't catch that, that's thinkingfunny.com.
Yeah, you Google that and it'll come up. And there's all kinds of information there and resources. We're trying to offer stuff that people can look at and have access to even a year later. But
sure.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about the contest that you put on.
Well, we've had a couple of years with the contest, and we're going to do that again. It it is trying to get people who've really not had a major publication some visibility. But that said, it's like, we'd love to have someone who'd scored in the bigs participate. But I think rather than have them in the contest, I'd rather see them in a seminar. So that's what we're trying to do. And we've had some wonderful, delightful entries. I mean, it's actually the hardest part of it is sometimes is, you know, with a judging panel of going, well, these are all great. You know, what are the criteria that make one somewhat better than another and economy?
Oh, sure.
You know, the number of jokes. I mean, Dave Barry talks about, you know, how many jokes you have to have per word. I mean, it's got to be tight and it's got to be funny consistently. It can't
sure.
sag.
So is there, you know, I'm pretty ignorant on this. Is there a monetary cash reward?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've paid people. I'm trying to think what it was. I think we've had $100, $50, $75. Or, you know, $50 for second place, $75 for third, because we figure you need the money to go buy some books. No, that sort of thing. And we've had it no entry fee. So it's been out of the general fees for the conference. And we've had discussion over whether we should have a nominal fee so we can even offer to pay the readers. Because what happens is when you get a lot of entries, it starts being a significant ask to have someone look
quality.
Them over.
Yeah, giving them the time they deserve.
Yeah, and we're trying not to ask anybody to do something for nothing. You know, we're trying to be fair, but also to compensate people fairly. I mean, I think that's important.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. In fact, I'm, I've got another radio show that I'm involved in called Scratched Up Radio Theater, and it's hard to get people involved in writing, you know, find those writers out there who want to help us out. I'm giving myself a little plug here, but you did attract quite a few writers through your contest.
Oh yeah, we had 100 entries, and that for as small bore as we were, I was very pleased with that. So we're doing all right.
Good. So let's talk a little bit about the writing you're doing today.
Well, you know, it's funny because we're talking about contests. What got me going months ago was I started thinking about screenwriting contests, because years ago I entered one and there were, I don't know, 500 or 700 entries. It was a national contest and I took ninth. And it was like, it motivated me to write. And then I tried to sell the script, which is extremely difficult to do. But I love writing dialogue. I love trying to visualize something and having action tell the story rather than a lot of narration. So I started looking at screenwriting contests, and I started researching a project I've had in mind for years and got a lot of material, started writing, but was really kind of having trouble struggling with it for reasons we talk about here. But what happened was last month, November, National Novel Writing Month, I decided, I'd done this in years gone by, and I was just going to, rather than try to write a screenplay, just take some of what I knew about this project I was working on. One of my heroes as a child, a pilot named Wiley Post, and see what I could do with it. And so I spent last month just writing, setting down, not always knowing what the heck I was going to do, but just getting words in the page.
And you have always been interested in aeronautics. I saw a picture. Was that your grandfather's plane?
Yeah, that cover art I'm working on for this book is my grandfather's biplane. And when I was a kid, people followed baseball and football and all that. And it's not like I couldn't tell a baseball from a football. one's bigger than the other. But the thing of it is, I was into aviation. I followed and read about the careers of fairly obscure people. A fellow named Lincoln Beachy cracked me up because he lived in the late 1800s up to 1950, and he died in an airplane crash doing a stunt. But not that that's funny, but what cracked me up about him was he was trying to impress upon people how important aviation was going to be. And in the late 1800s, he was he had a motorized balloon that he flew around in. And to get the attention of lawmakers, he flew it over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and bombed them with flower sacks.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, that's a true story.
That's a good one.
And what the early aviation had all these eccentric people who were brave, and you had to be kind of nuts to fly some of these things, but very individual.
Yeah.
And men and women that I just admired. And well, so that's who I followed.
You know, you bring up something interesting. You know, they were eccentrics. I mean, who would want to fly a biplane into a barn? Yeah, that was a major attraction.
Well, and it's interesting because a couple of years ago, when my wife and I went to one of her conferences, we had free time. We're in Indianapolis. And, of course, I've been a fan of both airplanes and fast cars for years. And so we went out to the Speedway. And this wasn't during any big event. It was fairly quiet out there. But we got a tour. And, it was really fun going around the course and all this, but they were talking about the logo of the Indianapolis Speedway, and it's this wheel with wings coming out of it. And I always thought, that's kind of dumb. And what they explained was in the early days of aviation and automobiles, they would race each other.
Oh, wow.
And some of the airplane versus car races happen, the earliest stuff in the Indianapolis Speedway, and that's why they have that logo.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just tuning in, my guest tonight on Write Stuff is Rob Lightfoot, and he's a writer, and we're talking about his latest projects. You got something going on Wiley Post.
I do. I know. I love asking people if they've ever heard the name Wiley Post, and a lot of people interested in aviation go, yeah, I know who that is. And then I start asking him, well, have you heard about the stories about him? And I guess I can do a spoiler alert here that avert your ears. I didn't realize till I started really researching it for this project, he'd spent a year in jail, in prison.
Well, first off, a little sketch.
Wiley Post was a first person to fly around the world by himself. That is his biggest accomplishment. Happened in 1933. He was 35 years old. Is that right? Yes. Well, he was almost 35. He turned 35 that November, and he did it in August, July and August. But the interesting thing for me was he was this person who did that. I knew that about him. And I also knew he was a pilot with one eye, which I thought was kind of strange. And all of these things come out of the fact that this was a man who, until he was 30, struggled, had setbacks, made huge mistakes, but was determined to do important things in aviation. He was determined since the time he was a kid. And I think part of the reason he had success was he just refused to give up. But he didn't. He literally, my project is going to be Wiley Post. And then I decided really an important figure in his wife, not surprisingly, was in his life, was his wife, May. Mm-hmm. And so the title of the book became Wiley and Me. And the subtitle, and again, this is all changing as I continue to write the book, was going to be 5 years of fame, because he was essentially 30, 31 when he finally started, you know, doing things that caught the national attention during the dark days of the Depression, sure, after the stock market crash. And he was a folk hero. He was this Oklahoma fellow who spoke with a thick accent, kind of shy, had one eye, which is part of his story, and did some amazing things.
He did some really brave things.
I mean, you just couldn't duplicate it today, because when he flew around the world, it's like he would land in places, there weren't airports. He had to arrange to have hundreds of gallons of gasoline available in faraway places. The weather service was terrible. There was, you know, weather predictions, not always accurate. But he had to fly vast distances in a plywood plane with a single engine. And he did it twice. The first time he did it with a navigator in 1931, a guy named Harold Gaddy. But he decided that he wanted a show could be done by one person. He did it in 8 days. So it was also a study in stamina. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, one of the stories I know a little bit about, but maybe you can elaborate on, is his marriage. And
part of the reason I wanted to tell this story, Jim, is, and the reason, I won't say the book got away from me, but it became something I could have never imagined, which has been very exciting. It's a story about a man who had mysterious hidden parts of his life. His prison record was kept from the public knowledge right at the point he died.
1 year in prison, right?
He had spent a year in prison. He had ups and downs in his life, and he had suffered some serious financial setbacks. And he was a person who was prone to anger and despair. And he got angry and literally became a highwayman for a month or two before he was terrible at it. Before he got caught, beat up by four guys, and thrown in prison. Because, you know, robbing people on the highway is not cool. not a good thing.
Not good.
But his wife, and he had various stories that appeared about them in the papers, and the marriage date changed back and forth and whatever. And the long and the short, and there were stories about him being a distant relative of hers, her taking her first airplane ride with him, falling in love, and they flew off and got married that day. The truth is, and it wasn't illegal, they were first cousins.
Oh boy.
They knew each other for years, but he was a lot older than she was, and her parents were not thrilled about her marrying someone who is, you know, older. She was 17 at the time. And also that he had this career that they were not too sure, you know, I mean, yeah, what's the future for somebody that's an aviator?
Is he going to survive?
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, that was their concern. And so their courtship story is really kind of sweet and funny. They decided to elope. They got a license in Texas where she lived, but they couldn't get married without her parents' permission. So they flew to Oklahoma. That was the plan. Well, in the air, Wiley had his plane. It had been working fine for months and months. It's how he made his living. Well, it developed engine trouble, and it was forced down in a cornfield. I mean, a cornfield where the corn was ready to be harvested. So it was a messy descent and landing of this biplane. You know, corn on the cob was flying everywhere. So they managed to get down without hurting themselves. The plane was trapped in this cornfield. Mm. And they had this wedding license. And Wiley was, you know, right after she made sure May was okay, his fiance, he went and checked the plane, found it needed this part. So they managed to get into town several miles away. He got the part, and they decided to get married just right there.
Wow.
So they got married, got a ride back out to the plane, and then spent 2 days having to hack corn away from in front of the plane. This is their honeymoon. This is true. This really happened. And I think it's sweet. So he could take the plane off. And in the first few years of their marriage, he was a nobody. And they flew around together. There's so many stories about them. And I'm going to launch into it. But the thing I want to say is, because there were these competing stories in newspapers, and I was able to look things up in the New York Times, which I found fascinating, but I'm also still a member of a column writing association, so I could look things up in newspapers.com. All these little bitty papers, some of whom haven't existed in decades, that have been microfilmed, put online, that you can look stories up. So I was searching all around the country for stories about May, Wiley's wife, and Wiley, and I found little stories that appeared nowhere else in some of the small town newspapers near where they lived, because they were local people, you know. And that's how I learned some of these things. So there, what happened in the course of writing this is I began to ask myself, well, why didn't we know some of these stories? Well, some of them are private. They didn't want them out. So one of the major things I had to do is I was researching and looking for things that were public record. There's all kinds of newsreel footage of him mm-hmm. landing his plane. What you don't know is that he was so prone to depression as he was landing his plane from this amazing flight, tens of thousands of people waiting in the ground of New York to congratulate him. He thought about flying away and hiding. He was so depressed that he thought, well, what am I going to do now? This isn't really that big a deal. I mean, his wife, once they got in the ground, after all the celebrity photos and stuff, he had to be talked up. His wife, back in the hotel room, said he was just in the deepest despair. Wow. That would happen to him. Mm-hmm. And not that that's a wonderful thing, but it just makes his accomplishments, to me, all the more amazing. Yeah. That he had all these demons he had to fight, and he still did some really cool stuff.
Yeah. Rich material, unusual mm-hmm. person. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm going to tell one more story, and then I'm going to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
It's going to be a novel, and then I'm going to try to make it into a screenplay to answer your question directly. But he also had... he wasn't all dark and down. He also was really funny and playful. And he would do things like, you know, be flying along and reach down and flip the engine off and make it look like it had an engine failure and have a force line just to scare people. He thought that was funny until it, you know, really happened.
That is scary.
But it is scary. But he had several brothers, and one of his brothers really hated flying. And he kept saying, oh, you should go up with me. Come on, you know. And so finally he got some sort of deal where they were going to go up and shoot coyotes, and their dad, Drance, and some adjacent ranchers, they were going to get paid for the pelts or something. So he says, look, I'll let you have the money if you do this. So they go up, and his brother's shooting coyotes, and shooting from aircraft is not as easy as you think it would be unless you get right down on it. So they got some coyotes and got back and went back for lunch, and his brother was done. He says, well, you know, I'm done. I'm not going back up. That was no fun. It was, you know, made me sick, whatever. So Wiley got mad. So, well, fine, I'll do it by myself. So he went up, took a shotgun. He's up trying to shoot coyotes. And he's, you know, flying with one hand, trying to hold the shotgun with the other. And you know what's going to happen. It happened. He hits an air pocket, just as he fires, and he blows off one of the struts in his wing.
Oh, you're kidding.
And the wing starts flapping around.
My God.
So he has to do an emergency landing. And some rancher comes up, and they get barbed wire and 2x4 posts, and really, and they patch the plane up so he can fly it back. True story.
Wow.
But the thing that strikes me is there's all these competing stories. So and I was very frustrated because I was trying to find, by research in historical museums, letters of correspondence between he and May, and there's only one, and I won't talk about that right now, but I can get to it. But what I finally had to do was realize I'm going to have to fill in the blanks. And I'm going to have to do it in a way where I try to make it clear what we really know, what is speculative, mm-hmm. without it being a documentary.
Sure.
I didn't want a documentary. So what I did was I had to invent a character, actually two characters, three, to whom this story is told.
Okay.
So May lived, and this is true, May lived another 53 or 4 years after her husband died, never remarried, kept his name, and by all accounts, you know, just mourned him that whole time. And also, true story, there was an account just before Wiley died where there was a gossip item in the newspaper that made his wife so mad she swore never to speak to reporters again. So she became, unlike a lot of people, when her husband passed, she became kind of a figure faded into history. And so I was wondering, well, what was it like to be her? You know, what was it like for their personal life? And so I finally had to create a situation in my storytelling, which is fictional, where she's telling her stories to a friend who's helping write them down, because May is not able to, you know, her hands are bothering her in old age and whatnot. And her friend is helping her record these stories. Well, her friend is a bit of a character, prone to exaggeration, jazzing things up.
Okay.
And so some of these stories start getting distorted, and they're being sold to a newspaper.
Oh.
And that person is telling these stories because that person, the newspaper reporter who's buying them, was a childhood fan of Wiley Post, who met him once when this reporter was only about 12. And he's telling these stories to one of his assistants. So what's happening is the same story in my writing is being told repeatedly, uh-huh. sometimes exaggerated, sometimes super into.
Okay.
And that's kind of what happened in some of these newspaper accounts, I'm quite sure, is there were things that really happened. You can see the footage. You know, Wiley ghost wrote a book with Harold Gatty. So there's things were, you know, there are accounts of his life, and in his ghostwritten book about his life, he doesn't mention his prison record, nor does he mention, you know, that he's married to his first cousin. I mean, there's things that were censored, understandably, but there's also things that were jazzed up. So part of my doing this is, I think this was an amazing man. He was flawed. He had some things that a lot of people helped him overcome. He you know, he's this person that's held up as somebody who did something amazing by himself. He had a team. I mean, his wife foremost among them. But also he had friends who made sure there was aviation fuel. We're talking 1931 and 1933 in Russia, when Russia was not recognized by the U.S. So it had to be all back channel friendship things.
Wow.
I mean,
this is his round the world flight.
This is his round the world flight. At one point when he thought he had it made, he was landing in Alaska. He was almost home and he was tired. And he taxied his plane over into a place that looked like it was a firm ground. It was mud. It stood his plane at its nose, and damaged the landing gear, and bent the propeller. And it was in the middle of nowhere, Alaska. Well, a bunch of miners came out, helped. They rigged a crane.
You're kidding.
They got the plane back down. They patched up the landing gear. And he went out there with chains and a wrench and straightened the propeller as best he could.
You're kidding.
No, this stuff really happened. I just.
It's hard to believe.
It's just the kind of people who would do this and who would not give up. And that's Wiley's story. Is he is a person who dropped out of school in the sixth grade, was a daydreamer. His father was a farmer. Father never cared for aviation. There's newsreel footage of his father, you know, they're congratulating the family. He goes, well, I hope he gets over this aviation thing. I don't see the point, you know, good old dad. Yeah. And, but Wiley couldn't saddle horses. He couldn't rig a plow. One time, but he was fascinated by machinery, even from an early age. And his father bought a bigger farm and needed farm equipment. So he went to the farm equipment store, and Wiley was fascinated. Mm. He just stood there and he started sketching. You know, he found a piece of paper, started sketching these. And they literally, he disappeared. And they had to crawl, they had to look for him. He crawled into a combine and they had to pry him out of all the knives and blades of the combine because he was so fascinated by gadgets.
Well, hey, you're hitting on something that's kind of interesting. And I can see we're going to have you in for another interview because we're running a little short of time right now. But why don't you tell us about that high altitude suit?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite stories is Wiley used this plane called the Winnie Mae, and she is her character in her own right in this story, for two around-the-world trips, a bunch of record-setting stuff. But he couldn't afford, and money was always a problem for Wiley because aviation's expensive, was then, is now. And he had this amazing plane, but it was being surpassed by newer planes. Well, he was still trying to set records. Couldn't set speed records, so he decided to set altitude records. And the plane couldn't be pressurized, so he knew he had to pressurize himself. And he designed, and he didn't just go to somebody. He did it, and then he went to the Goodyear Rubber Company. He was working with the Army. It was kind of a semi-secret project for altitude research. And he designed the very first spacesuit. And there are astronauts who've said, you know, if you want to look at the origin of this history of the spacesuit, look to Wiley Post. And he designed this rubberized suit. He had it hooked to the engine, which was designed to fly at 40 and 50,000 feet. To pressurize the suit. And the long and the short of it is he designed the suit where he looked like a spaceman, and he was able to fly high. But one time he had a crash. He had to land his plane. The plane was sabotaged, which is another story. And he landed in the middle of the desert in this suit, which he couldn't take off by himself. And he was like, what do I do? And he started walking along the highway. He came across a motorist who had the hood up, was having mechanical problems. And the guy helped him, but before that, he scared the daylights out of him, thinking he was a Martian.
Sure.
And that's a true story. That really happened.
Yeah, great story. Good material.
All kinds of fun stories.
My last question would be, whose perspective is this going to be? Is it going to be multiple?
Yes.
Okay.
And the surprise is it's not just Wiley's story. It's Wiley and his wife's story, but it's also this woman who falls in love with Wiley while learning from his wife the story. So it's, and me is, and that woman, and really, and us.
Cool. Well, hey, my guest this evening has been Rob Lightfoot. I'm afraid we're just running out of time, Rob. Like I said, maybe down the road we'll get you in here into the studio again. And it's really been fun. It's been fun, and I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Jim. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, folks, that's going to be it for tonight. This is you've been listening to Right Stuff on KKRN. Radio, and if you want to help us out with a little donation, go to kkrn.org and hit that donate button. And thanks for listening. Have a nice evening.